everyone, and welcome to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. My name is Elaine Summerfield, host of Inspire Indeed, where we're discussing community issues and hearing from the people who are working hard to address them. And hopefully you'll be inspired to think about how you're making a difference with your deeds. You know, it's easy to experience a hot summer and make a passing comment like, oh, it's global warming, that work. Or see all of the kind of strange weather we've had lately, kind of intermittent storms that we're not used to. Or see the national coverage of hurricanes and the derecho, whatever that is. But, you know, you get a sense that there's something out of whack with our climate. And it's hard to really pinpoint what that's all about. Is there really enough evidence to demonstrate that what we anecdotally feel as strained is actually a trend caused by human consumption patterns? And just like the Grand Canyon was not carved out overnight, we can't expect the immediate impacts of our dependence on carbon-producing energy sources to demonstrate an impact. Or maybe we can. Maybe we can start to see these impacts happening now at a rapidly increasing pace. Well, next week, a delegation of Citizens Climate Lobby members from Richmond will be able to attend the Citizens Climate Lobby 4th Annual International Conference, where this topic is going to be covered in detail, emphasizing how we can take action to address it. Two of those local members are here with me today to talk about those implications of climate change and how we can support policies that could make a positive impact. William Nelson and Richard Toronto, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Great. Well, I'm assuming that because you're with Citizens Climate Lobby, you are definitely true believers in relation to global warming and climate change. But could you share a little bit about what you mean by climate warming? And what would you say to a skeptic to convince them that these impacts on our climate are really taking place? And introduce yourself when you start, so we know which one's William, which one's Richard.
Yeah, this is Richard Toronto. Before we get going, I'd like to emphasize an important thing, the difference between weather and climate. The rain this morning, the storms we had last week, a tornado, a derecho, that's weather. A rainier or cooler May is weather. But what the earth or a region or a country or your back garden has experienced over the last 50 or 100 years, that's climate. You can't say it's hot this summer, my gosh, it's global warming, or it's cool this spring, my gosh, it's global cooling. You have to go over a long period of time, 50 or 100 years minimum. So today we're going to talk about climate, but not weather.
Great.
Climate change is real, and over 90% of climate scientists believe there is a relationship between human activities and the change in the climate. The relationship between anthropogenic, that's a long word, it means man-made CO2 emissions, and warming has been well documented scientifically. There are other factors to consider that affect warming, such as methane gas. As the Arctic areas thaw, methane gas will be, which is another greenhouse gas, will be released from the permafrost. There's a lot of deforestation going on that is forests are being changing to grasslands and grazing areas. As trees are a absorber of CO2, there's fewer trees and more CO2 in the atmosphere. Less CO2 can be absorbed. Many of the indicators of warming that climate scientists have predicted will happen are already occurring. We see, as I said before, increased levels of CO2 in the atmosphere. The sea level is rising. We're seeing, or appear to be seeing, more extreme weather events. The oceans are becoming more acidic, and this prevents corals from growing. It prevents small animals that are the basis of the food chain from growing. Glaciers are retreating. Over a large portion of the world, the ice cap in the North Pole, as we see frequently on TV, is retreating, and a lot of areas are changing from fertile areas to grass to deserts. And yes, there are a lot of skeptics or challengers or deniers. We read about them continuously. They have their opinions, and we respect that. And one thing that good comes out of it, they encourage the climate scientists to provide more scientific evidence to back up their position. But as an aside, me personally, I take some of these skeptics not too lightly, but I look at their bona fides. Many of them are the same people who had negative comments about cancer-causing effects of smoking tobacco. They were denied the effects of DDT, okay. acid rain, and mm-hmm. other things.
So maybe folks that have a certain philosophy or point of view, but it's not backed up by the science that we now have.
Yes, you may have a physicist mm-hmm. or an electrical engineer saying there is no climate change. And how do you weigh that against a climate scientist who spent his whole career saying, I've got the evidence that there is?
Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, you've talked a little bit about the effects of climate warming. What does that impact on Virginia look like? William, would you like to chime in?
Well, there's going to be a significant impact. The biggest one is going to be, well, the next biggest one is going to be temperature. We're going to be a lot warmer. In the last 20 years, I think we warmed up about a half a degree to a degree and a half, and we feel hotter already. People talk about it. But with the continued rise of CO2 and a runaway greenhouse gas effect, we could get 7 degrees Fahrenheit warmer. Now, that's really warm. And we'll see like 25 more days over in the 95 degrees in the year. Frosts will come later in the spring earlier. Mm-hmm. Frosts will stop earlier in the spring, come later in the fall. We'll have more growing days, but it's going to be too hot for a lot of things to grow. So we're going to be hot.
So what time frame? You're talking, like Richard said at the beginning, we're not talking about the weather. We're talking about climate. So what time frame are you talking about?
I'm talking about the next 80 years. Okay. We could get 6 to 8 degrees in 80 years if we do nothing, or possibly worse. Now, here's the problem with that. We're not good at making long-range decisions. But if we don't make them now, we are saddling our children and our grandchildren with a deck of cards that they're not going to be able to play with. It's going to be very hard. It's going to change everything. They'll be very dry in the Southwest. It might be rainier in Northern Virginia. There's going to be food problems nationally. The rice paddies and low-lying areas will be inundated with seawater. So it's going to create global conflict, people migrating from overrun areas. We'll have people migrating from Norfolk. The rising sea level is a problem. If it goes up, as predicted, 6 feet mm-hmm. by 2100, it could be more, could be less. A Cat 3 hurricane with a usual surge will completely inundate tidewater in Norfolk. So it's not just real estate. That's where the military is. They're not going to want to have a base that's going to be susceptible to hurricanes in the major stores. They're not going to want to have a base where people can't live because their houses will be overwhelmed.
So if that changes, that changes the structure of the economy.
That changes
so
the economy.
It's all of these other things that come into play with how we form ourselves as a society. So the impacts are not just on the environment. It goes far deeper than that. It's the food sources that we rely mm-hmm. on. It's where we can actually live. It's mm-hmm. where we can work and right. where we can form communities.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not just about your beach house. It's about the way we live here right now, what we eat, mm-hmm. what we drink, and our ability to sustain ourselves.
Now, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM. You can hear previous shows on our blog, which is inspireindeed.blogspot.com. But today we're talking with William Nelson and Richard Toronto of Citizens Climate Lobby. Why don't you share your website where people can get more details as a reference point?
Sure. It's www.citizensclimatelobby.org. So right. if you Google Citizens Climate Lobby, it'll pop up. That's a national website, but they have a connect button that will connect you to us. We're also on Facebook at CCLRVA, so you can find us that way too.
CCLRVA on mm-hmm. Facebook. Great. Mm-hmm. Thanks, William. So if this climate change is taking place over decades, Why is it important for us to take action now rather than later? How do you inspire the urgency that you all clearly feel with taking your lead in advocacy on this?
That's a good question, because he who hesitates is lost, a trite saying, I hate to say that, but there's some validity to that too. And a lot of comments are that plants live better and grow better under higher CO2. That is true, and you can say, is warming all bad? And simple answer to that is no. It's not all bad. It's not for a while anyway. Warming and increased CO2 levels will stimulate plant growth. They'll grow better, they'll grow faster, and have higher yields of grain, and corn, and wheat. But up to a point, if the temperature goes hot, increases more than 4 degrees, and the CO2 levels continue to rise, crop yields will begin to fall. And this is maybe 30, 40, 50 years from now, productivity mm-hmm. will go down. Carbon dioxide and increased carbon dioxide is good for weeds. Weeds love it. Poison ivy, goldenrod, will go bananas because it's mm. so, it they
the
love
kudzu.
It. The higher it is, kudzu will grow. And the other thing are beetles. Beetles like high CO2 for some reason.
Uh-huh.
And they'll become crop pests will increase. And another simple thing is the tomatoes in your garden. Tomatoes don't pollinate if the nighttime temperature is above 72 degrees. That's proven. So your backyard, you know, globe tomatoes will be a thing of the past. And these climate zones will be moving north too as the warming continues.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of acting now rather than later, William, you said earlier that it's hard for us to make just long-range decisions.
Yes,
it is. Our political system and human nature just mm-hmm. wants to address the problems in front of us. And we mm-hmm. we want to believe in a good world. We want to believe in a fair world. We want to believe in a world where everything works out. And that's great, but this is like something in slow motion, where if you see it happening very slowly, like a juggernaut, and if you don't take some action, bad things are going to happen. If I told you that there's an asteroid headed for the Earth that was going to hit in 40 years, and it was going to make a huge impact and change everything on Earth, would it take 10 years for Congress and the people to act to develop a plan to make some changes that might allow us to dodge it? Or would it take 20 years, 30 years? I don't know. I know they won't get anything done in the first few years.
Mm.
But what if I told you you've got 5 years to put something in place that could move the orbit of Earth just a little bit so the asteroid will miss? People will say, oh no, NASA got it wrong. It's really going to miss us. People are going to say, oh no, it won't be that bad. Some people will say, oh no, it'll be good because it'll bring some new elements to Earth. So you get a lot of opinions, but this is coming. It's long range, but it's going to come, and we've just got to start moving now.
So what can be done about it now at this time?
There's a bunch of things you can do. The first thing is you can just pass a law saying we're not going to burn any more carbon. And it's oil, coal, and gas. To get the energy out, we burn it. That produces the CO2. About 60 to 70% of the CO2 emissions are from energy to make electricity. So we can say we're going to stop burning it, but that's not going to happen because we can't live without our energy. We can't pass a law. It'll just rip society apart.
You couldn't hear this radio station.
Yeah, right. That's right. You could not hear us. We can regulate the amount it'll be burned, pass a law and cap it, but that's very hard to do. You'd have to set a target. Will that be the right target? By the time we got debated and through with that and adjusting it, it'll all be over.
So are you referring to the cap and trade plan?
I'm referring to just saying you can only burn so much CO2 or you can only eliminate so much. Now, cap and trade is, it failed several times in Congress. Mm-hmm. Bitter fights over that. What cap and trade does is a company that burns something and emits CO2 will be allowed to burn X amount of carbon, and that's their cap. Now, if they wanted to burn more, they would have to trade with an offset, like, say, buy acreage in the Amazon, which would be left natural, and that's the offset. So you're really still burning the CO2, you're just trying to offset it. it doesn't really stop the trajectory of the burning of the carbon dioxide. It's too complicated. It's too easy to get around. And it develops a huge bureaucracy that government is going to have to do to monitor and implement that. And we haven't done well with those bureaucracies. And by the time we finish with all the offsets and the dispensations and the special cases, we're not going to be where we need to be. That's why we like fee and dividend on a carbon tax. And I'll tell you a little bit about that if you'd like.
Yeah, carbon tax, you said?
You can call it a carbon tax or a carbon fee and dividend. Either way, what it is, when the carbon material comes out of the ground, you put a fee on it per ton right out of the ground. So it's easy to do. You don't have to tax 25 million people. You don't have to tax a lot of organizations. It's just 10,000 people that produce the carbon material. You tax them or put a fee on it. At the source, and that fee then will increase the price of carbon-based materials, but that makes alternate energy more affordable. And the increase that the tax will then be rebated to the public, because your cost of gas will go up, your heating oil will go up, your all that will go up, you'll get a rebate check back to offset that. Two-thirds of people in the United States and America would be revenue neutral under a scenario of $15 per ton of carbon tax coming out every year.
So how viable is that politically? I mean, the word tax, it is not a very viable concept when you look at Congress these days.
People kick that around. They say, if we call it a fee, they'll say you're trying to hide the tax. If we call it tax, you're saying, well, it's really a fee. It really is a fee.
It's a fee
and a dividend.
Yeah.
But we're calling it tax because we don't want people to think we're being tricky.
Okay. But it's really a fee according to use.
According to use, right. Mm-hmm. And up front. Prospectively. Mm-hmm. And the projections are to get down to reducing emissions to 80% below what we have in 2005, which is what we need to do to start turning this around. We would have to start a tax at $15 a ton and add $10 a year to that. Now, $15 a ton will increase
a ton of CO2, not a ton of oil.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
That's what makes coal more expensive, because coal emits a lot of CO2. So that would raise your price of gas 15 cents a gallon. Okay, not too much.
But that's a lot for some people.
It's a lot for some people, but look what happened. You know, it changes 15 cents a gallon during the year. So that's why the rebate comes back to people, because it does hurt people, especially low-income people. Mm-hmm.
They rely on transportation for work and all that.
But it's politically viable. Most economists favor it. It uses the free market, and that's why. Because if you do this, then you use the best tool we have to make changes, the free market. When carbon-based energy gets expensive and alternate-based energy starts to become more affordable
attractive.
Comparatively, mm-hmm. the market will move towards that. The price point will be set, and the market will do the work necessary to develop the green industry. Mm-hmm. It will also eliminate a lot of subsidies, because you won't have – there's – $80 billion a year in subsidies to the oil companies. We'll eliminate them. We'll eliminate the subsidies to alternative energy and let the market work it out. And it will, because that's what it's really good at. You just have to level the playing field so that non-carbon producing energy can take effect.
Can have a role mm-hmm. in addressing our day-to-day lives. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, though, it's based on the economic argument that if carbon producing energy is more expensive, people will stop choosing it, or people will find ways to use less of it. Is that part of the basis?
That's part of it. People will use less of it, but industry that creates electricity and energy using non-carbon sources will then prosper.
Okay.
It will build a whole energy. And by using the marketplace, that's a very conservative solution. The conservative economists love it, but they don't get elected. They do like it. A number of conservative individuals are starting to look at this, because it uses what they value, which is the capitalist free market system, to mm-hmm. fix a problem. It eliminates some offsets and eliminates mm-hmm. some special privileges.
Mm-hmm. And it creates jobs.
And creates jobs in the alternative energy field.
Wind, solar, geothermal.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm.
And jobs in the coal industry are relatively stable. Mm-hmm. The oil industry are relatively stable.
There's not going to be a lot of growth there.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. British Columbia has a carbon tax in place. They've
Australia.
Had it for
number
of years.
I was just going to ask you about other countries.
Mm-hmm. Sure. It's been very successful. They raised it up to $30 a ton of CO2 produced now. They have not had an economic collapse. They're doing well. 57% The people in British Columbia, when polled, are happy with it. They like it. Australia has one in place. 33 countries actually have some form of carbon tax, and about 18 political subunits of countries have some form of carbon tax. Mm-hmm. So it's not a strange animal. It's not perfect. They're working out their wrinkles, but it's out there. It's not a new thing.
So this is part of what Citizens Climate Lobby is working to promote then, what you're talking about?
That is. Mm-hmm. Education is important to mm-hmm. us, but we think action needs to be taken now, and effective action, and a carbon tax or fee and dividend is going to be the quickest and most effective solution. We'll dither around trying to decide till it's too late otherwise.
Right. Well, tell us a little bit about what Citizens Climate Lobby does and what the Richmond chapter is up to, and maybe how people could get involved.
Sure.
Richard?
We started about 4 years ago with two people, Ellie Sparks and myself, and now we have how many on the email? We have meetings once a month of about anywhere from 10 to 15 people, and we have a online conference call with the headquarters, and we have a speaker for about half an hour on topics related to climate change, and then we have a roll call. We see what each other chapters are doing, and most of the chapters are doing. There's, mm-hmm. 108 chapters now in the U.S., mm-hmm. isn't it? Mm-hmm. And so it's a growing from a handful, 4 or 5 years ago. And what we do letter writing campaigns to our congressmen. We visit our congressmen. We have visited Representative Cantor's office 4 times, and we'll be mm-hmm. seeing him personally, previously with his staff. We'll be seeing him face-to-face, which will be fun, mm-hmm. in Washington next week.
Great, mm-hmm. great. Yeah. And so it's a way for community members to get together, learn about this issue area together, and then
yes.
take action together.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so yep. so tell us a little bit how people can get plugged into that network.
Sure, absolutely. But the mission here is to build a political will for a stable mm-hmm. climate. So we're not carrying placards, we're not marching. We are working with government to build the political will in the American democracy for people to get their elected officials to change their mind and take action. There's a weekly introductory call every Wednesday. If you go to that webpage, www.citizensclimate.org, there'll be a weekly introductory call. And you can click on that, sign up, and then you'll be able to get a call. It's actually a national conference call, and they'll tell you all about Citizens Climate Lobby and what it does.
Okay.
And they'll hook you up with my local chapter.
So citizensclimatelobby.org is where
that will do it. Yep, mm-hmm. Just Google Citizens Climate Lobby. Mm-hmm. We had 535 congressional meetings last year, mm-hmm. among all our members. So we did 537 published letters and almost as many congressional meetings. So we've really done a lot of work in terms of trying to change people's mind.
So that's a big education effort.
That's what we do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like you said, to help change political will. Now, if people are interested, you said in Richmond, you also have a Facebook page. What was that again?
That's CCL-RVA.
And that will is where you can get information about the weekly
yes.
meetings you were
mm-hmm.
talking about?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, great.
We have the weekly conference call at the National to learn about Citizens Climate Lobby. Mm-hmm. We have monthly meetings at the main library, usually at 12:30, the first Saturday of every month.
The first Saturday every month, downtown,
yeah.
library.
Downtown library. Except yeah. for July, because it's a holiday. But we'll have it the week after. But look at the Facebook page, and there'll be an announcement. If you send the email a link at that Facebook page, we'll get back to you with an email.
Great. Well, it sounds like a great way for people mm-hmm. who are just starting to learn about this topic to get plugged in, to learn, to see how you can take small actions and make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. There's a lot of good partners. Sierra Club is very active.
Yeah.
Chesapeake Climate Action Network is very active. So there's something for everybody. I mean, if you want to demonstrate, do placards, if you want to do marches, if you do want to lobby, if you want to write letters, but with all the organizations available, there's something for everybody to do and get involved, and
I think
now is the time to do it.
Yeah, now is the time. Like you said earlier, mm-hmm. it's now, or we're going to be seeing those impacts quickly. If not us, our children, our grandchildren, mm-hmm. we really need to be thinking about our future generations when we think about long-term climate change.
So. As Chief Seattle said a long time ago, it says, we do not inherit the earth from our ancestors, we borrow it from our children. We should all think about that.
That's a nice sentiment to end on. Well, already our time is up, and I really appreciate you coming in, Richard Taranto and William Nelson from Citizens Climate Lobby, the Richmond chapter. And if you want to learn more about them, go to their Facebook page, ccl.rva, or Google Citizens Climate Lobby, and you'll learn more. You've been listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM. My name's Elaine Summerfield, and I hope you've enjoyed this show, learning about nonprofits and community issues, and are thinking about how you can go out and make a difference with your deeds.